Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Streets Ahead podcast. I know it's been a while since we've podded recently. Adam can't make it today, which I think is the first time we've been deserted by Adam.
It's the first time ever. Yeah, Adam is unwell, so poor guy. He feels bad, but he can't make it to London today, so just us two.
All right. Well, I don't
actually,
know.
Actually, three.
Well, it's going to be three. We've got a special guest filling in for Adam, and probably much more interesting in a way than Adam. So it's me. I'm Ned Bolton. You are
Laura Laker,
and our special guest today, and I'll tell you where we are because that's key to it in a second. But our special guest is Alison Gowman, who is the author of The City of London. That is the voice of Alison Gowman. That's what she sounds like when she uses her voice. Now then, I'm going to paint a picture of words here. I am in a part of the City of London with Laura and Alison that I have literally never been into. Well, not right here.
Yeah.
But we are a stone's throw from what I consider to be one of the most distinctive, and probably not in a good way, roundabouts in all of London.
In
the bottom 10 roundabouts, possibly in the world, which always seems to have, whichever way I go around it on my bike, a howling wind that kind of like hits you flat in the face. And it's London Wall, isn't it? That's where we are.
Yeah, we're by London Wall. We're near the Barbican, and we're near one of the livery halls.
At which point, we've probably run out of our expertise, so I'm going to put that question to Alison, who's going to give us a guided tour of this area and explain why this fits into the agenda of Streets Ahead podcast and how it relates to active travel, past and present.
And Alison, we should say, is an older woman of the City of London. I don't know what an older person does.
Yeah, well, I'm an elected alderman, I call myself, simply because I'm Gowman, alderman, it just really worked like, for me. But I'm an elected member of the City of London Corporation, the Court of Common Council. So I'm elected by the people who live and work in the city. And the bit of the city I represent is called Dowgate Ward. And we're not in Dowgate Ward, we're in Aldersgate Ward. And all these gates, you might realise, they were the ancient gates to the City of London. Mm. And Aldersgate is where we are now, just off Aldersgate Street, right in front of Ironmongers Hall, which is a wonderful ancient-looking hall, although it was actually only built in the 1920s.
I was going to say, it's 20th century,
it's
isn't it?
It's spectacular, and it absolutely resonates to the role of the Ironmongers livery. Mm. But I think what we're going to do is sneak up behind Ironmongers Hall, up a little footpath, and take ourselves up into the air.
Well, that is a teaser, if ever. So let's do that, and we're going to do that thing that you do in podcasts and edited, you know, content, where you jump forward in time with a simple edit.
So we're coming up behind and coming up into. So there's quite a lot of bits of the Barbican which are very green. You can see there, this is the girls' school playing ground. There's girls' school in the middle of the Barbican. Wow. And that's their playing ground. They've got a hockey stroke football pitch there.
So just to explain, now we've walked away from Ironmongers Hall and we are now walking on to, remind me what decade the Barbican building was built in?
Well, it was opened in the late 60s, early 70s. It took an awfully long time to be built for various reasons.
I can imagine, yeah. So classic Barbican, for those of you who know what it looks like, there's a lot of that kind of very rough, unfinished looking concrete, tiled walkways. We've gone up two flights of stairs, but the sort of like spectacular site of the Barbican central courtyard is kind of revealed to us now with everybody's flats there. And it's the tradition of residents of the Barbican, isn't it, that they just grow these wonderful window boxes.
They have an obligation to actually have a window box, which shows that not absolutely everybody has. This isn't the central square. The central square is really around the Barbican Centre, the Arts Centre, but we're looking over a wonderful sports pitch, which is used by the City of London School for Girls. And there are also two or three tennis courts here as well, which are open to the public to book and use as well. So, yeah, it's a great vista. And lots of greenery and birds you can hear twittering.
Excellent. Do tell us a little bit about, what would you describe this walkway that we're on? What's the sort of technical word for it?
Well, the technical word for this is a pedway. The City of London Corporation, post-war, when the Barbican was being planned, decided that they wanted to build pedways. And it's not difficult to understand. They're pedestrian walkways, and it's been sort of scrunched together, and it's not used in common parlance. What usually we talk about is the high walk, and you'll see some of the street signs around here, and they say high walk with names.
And was this at the time architecturally completely revolutionary? Was this something that hadn't been sort of done before, or where did they draw their inspiration from for it, do you think?
Well, I think the whole of the Barbican Centre, which was designed as a result of an architectural competition, and as I understand it, the three architects who were bidding, amongst others, said if they won it, they'd work together. So Chamberlain, Bonn and Powell were individuals who then decided to work together, and they were very much influenced by the Bauhaus architectural movement and also, you know, communal living. Corbusier also, these are very reminiscent of that. When it was built and completed, it was the most intensely, densely occupied part of Europe.
Wow.
And also the tower blocks, there are three tower blocks, were also the highest residential-only blocks in Europe.
And this was really high-tech stuff, wasn't it? Because even though the concrete looks rough, there's a lovely documentary about this, and even though the concrete looks rough, they got these Italian craftsmen in to kind of finish this structure in the way that it looks today, but it does kind of look very sort of roughly hewn. But it was very futuristic at the time, wasn't it? This was kind of what cities of the future might look like in the 50s and 60s.
It was a complete village in itself. There's a fire station here, there's a doctor's surgery here, there were shops here. Mm. Most of those sadly have now all closed down for various reasons. But it is a bastion. I mean, it is, Barbican means, you know, a fortification on the wall. And it was meant to be a complete village, which is why the pedways kept it sort of very much united in itself, although the pedways spread out or intended to spread out through the rest of the city. Mm. But there are also other little indications. There's a bit which looks very much like a drawbridge. Obviously, it's a concrete bridge, so it can't be updrawn or drawn up, but it is meant to indicate that we are in an isolated island area.
And the dream was at the time that people would be walking around the city on these structures. And when it was built, I think a third of the city of London had been destroyed in the Second World War. And so they were starting with a fresh slate, and they kind of imagined this new world where people would be walking around on the first floor around the city.
Yeah, you've got it absolutely right, Laura. This was 44 acres of destruction just north of London Wall, which is now a busy two-lane highway, which I think we should go and have a look there, because that will give you the view of how this was built up north of the wall and what the impact of that wall was, if we could.
Let's do that. So we just walked along the John Wesley High Walk out of the square that we were in, and we're passing the Museum of London, which many, many, many of you will know. I remember taking my kids there when they were little and loving it. But last few years it's been closed, hasn't it, to the public?
It closed in December of last year. It's only been closed a few months. And of course the Museum of London in Docklands is still open, brilliant to visit as well. So just outside the front door of the museum there is this rotunda roundabout, which I think Laura felt was, you know, difficult to navigate if you're on the street outside. But when you're inside it, it's a lovely garden.
It's
got
amazing.
A great sweep with this wonderful horse chestnut tree. And what's really interesting is that actually underneath it, you can see a door leading. The museum actually stores a lot of its archaeological remains, including its 20,000 skeletons, bodies that it has by way of a collection. They have one of the largest archaeological collections of a museum indeed, and they're obviously bodies that have been excavated in archaeology digs all around London over the last million years.
Wow.
That's amazing, that's a great fact. So that's what, this is where they come?
This is where they're stored, because the Museum of London is the sort of the archive for all of these items. And it's a big issue, because we've now got to decide where we're going to store them with moving to Smithfield and making sure that we're...
What's happening to the museum? I didn't realise.
The Museum of London is moving its site to West Smithfield, yes.
Okay.
And the building works, so it's a refit of a wonderful building that's there, which was used as the meat market and the poultry market, has been empty for 20-odd years now. And so the museum is going to breathe life into that part of the Smithfield Museum and that whole area by Farringdon Station.
So I'm going out on a limb here, because I think this is mind-blowing. You know, we from the outside, this is not an attractive building. The exterior space is quite intimidating, and it, you know, the design around it is not anything that you want to celebrate. But
it's
you step in,
yeah,
absolutely. It's given over to, as you said, 2-lane sort of like road that goes past. It's always busy, but step inside and it is a hidden world, isn't it? So, but is that part of the reason? Because some of this architecture is designed to sort of replicate that idea of village life sort of tucked away and connected with itself, that some of it turns its back a little bit on the rest of the city around it. And was that one of the reasons why perhaps the Museum of London space didn't work terribly well here, because it's upper level and slightly inaccessible looking, or you'd have to know that it was there almost? Or am I sort of reading too much into it?
No, you're right. The main entrance to the Museum of London is at the Pedway level, the High Walk level. And although there are 6 entrances to it on the street below, which all say Museum of London with a big arrow, somehow people arrive here and do not see those entrances.
No, I remember my first visit, exactly that. How do we actually get in?
Yeah, and that's a shame. And the museum, obviously, the museum has been here. I'm a governor of the museum. We have been here for, you know, 20 or 30 years. So we've survived. We had a huge footfall of visitors in person, obviously, over the many years. So it has worked. But clearly in Smithfield, I mean, one of the design features of the new museum is that it's going to be permeable from all sides, from Farringdon Station with all of those train links, but people walking through, walking by. It's going to be the exact opposite of here, which can feel a little bit remote and above the public access. Yes, indeed. And that's part of the problem with the Pedway, which is that buildings like the Museum of London, but if we move along in a minute, 125 London Wall effectively had 2 entrances at ground floor and at this High Walk level. And so what did you do? Double security? Who was coming in where? What was going on? It made it a very confusing way to read the street scene.
A little bit bleak. It's not like the High Line in New York, is it? But, it, you know, because there's no plants on it. It's a sort of very sort of hard... I don't know, it's just tiles and glass and concrete.
Yeah.
And although it's a traffic-free space, it really kind of lacks a soul. I think that was part of the problem with it. I don't know if you feel the same, Alison, or if I'm just being rude about your Pedway.
Yeah, you're just being super rude about where she lives.
No, but I love the Barbican, it's beautiful, but these Pedways are kind of... They could do with the plants.
I can't deny that these Pedways are basic in a sense. As you say, the tiles, steel, concrete... railings, but we're going to go and see the new Pedways in a minute and you'll be surprised. And anyway, from this view here on the right, although we've got this double lane highway and the bus going by, on the left we're looking down on an original bit of the London Wall.
Oh yeah.
We're looking down on another livery hall, the Barber's Hall. They've got a special, they're barber surgeons, which means that they're involved in medicine, and they've got a physic garden hidden in the wall.
Wow.
That's there, which you can go and walk through and walk down.
Wow, with healing plants.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lovely area of green grass and able to play in and enjoy. And they've not mowed it, so it's all lovely and biodiverse.
Wild,
yeah, brilliant.
Fairly recently, I was in Monaco. I don't know if you know Monaco very well.
I don't.
but I was weirdly reminded of it, because Monaco has got lots of these pedways. It's built, you know, it's very, very steep, actually. So there's lots of... escalators and lots of steps, and also these pedways sort of take you from what feels like public space through private space. And so it's quite confusing. You think, am I actually in a someone's office block here? Or, and it feels a bit like this. So you've got this kind of curious intermingling of what feels like you're in a shopping centre or an office, but actually it's a kind of public highway.
Well, I think you actually put your finger on a really good point here, because when it comes to mending the tiles, which there's red tiles all the way around the Barbican, and the residents want them mended, and then the city says, well, is it Barbican, or is it city walkway, or is it highway, or is it pavement?
So it's not just me who's confused.
And there are quite a lot of those sort of arguments. So we've got this yellow line, which was originally drawn to lead everybody from the station to the Barbican Centre. Do you remember when the Barbican, the Arts Centre opened? Everybody said nobody can find their way. So they painted the yellow line.
It's rather faded now, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's still there. But where it's been, where the tiles and the flooring has had to be changed, there's now an argument. Who's going to repaint it? Is it the Barbican Centre going to have to repaint it? Or is it the adjoining owners, or is it the corporation? So that's why you can see it's faded and not quite there. But there are still roundels in the floor that point to the Barbican Centre, and with an arrow, so we know
just
which way we're going.
Yeah. Right, now we're turning right onto St Alphege. Is that how you pronounce it? St Alphege?
Yep.
High Walk, EC2, and this is brand spanking new.
Yeah.
We've got plants.
So this was a walkway. Well, actually, this was really a sort of a podium. And actually, it was very... I've lived here 20 plus years. And even in my time, there was a pub here, which was really not very well used. There was an out-of-date NatWest Bank. So it was a really dull area. I agree with you. This area was dull. And suddenly, it's been redeveloped. So this is London Wall Place now. Three new wonderful buildings. And they've had to replace, and it's wonderful, they've replaced the walkway, the pedway, and we've got this lovely green wall on our left.
And I was ivy and ferns and geraniums.
And I was dubious when it was first planted. I thought, oh, will it stay? Will it be kept up? And it's still looking wonderful.
Oh, it's fabulous, yeah. Really good time of year to see it as well, with everything in flower the way it is. Lovely.
This building was built... This was encased in a car park. I can't believe it. You could just see it. There was a whole wall. You walked along London Wall and you saw a concrete wall, I'm afraid. And they've opened it all up into these lovely gardens. This development is fantastic. There's a little cafe down there as well.
And St Alphege Tower is a Norman, is it Norman or something like that? A Norman tower? Looks like it, doesn't it?
Well, it's got a pointy bit, so I think it might be more Gothic than Norman. But St Alphege was an Anglo-Saxon saint, and there aren't many St Alphege churches around the place, but there is one here, and it's obviously now a ruin. But it's a lovely setting, and although we can hear drilling in the background because there's development happening across the road, and there is a busy road in between, but it can still feel very quiet and peaceful over here.
Okay, so this pedway is obviously part of a new... When was this all completed? This
2018, I think.
Something like that, 2018, so 4 or 5 years ago. But clearly inspired by the original architects of Barbican. So they've taken the lessons there and sort of given it a modern twist and actually a bit of an improvement.
Yeah. To be honest, there was a previous design for this area, and a major bank, an American bank, were going to move here. And they said, we don't want all these walkways and lots of members of the public walking through, because we think it will be a security risk for us. And of course, the Barbican residents were absolutely adamant that it is actually their route into the city at this high walk level. And so we were insistent, and that bank withdrew from actually the whole building project here.
I think because of the pedway issue.
They said,
amongst
others, they said it was because of the residents, but I think they'd already got cold feet and wanted to change their minds. But we're very pleased that the redesign, with these lovely pedways that wind in and out, they don't intrude on the security, and they are just a delight because they've reimagined them for a modern era. And you can just spot there's one that doesn't go anywhere.
I just noticed it. So what, like, just branching off to about 50 yards ahead of us, branches off to the right, there's actually a hoarding where you can't, to prevent us getting onto it, but there's a pedway that just kind of like shoots out over the road and stops in thin air, like a really, really painful looking diving board. But obviously that's going to be connected with something that's going to go up in that space.
Until, 9 months ago, it was connected to that building that was there, and I walked over it regularly. But the point is, that building there is now being knocked down. But when that building is built up again,
it'll be connected.
It'll be back there again. And that's what happened to the pedways, that after they were developed, and they, there wasn't a full scheme, and lots of buildings were built on the basis that they would be connected, but they didn't always get connected, so there was a bit of a disjuncture of wishes and outcomes there. And what has been happening, you know, since the 80s and 90s, developers haven't wanted the walkways, so there used to be some over Bishopsgate, and they're not there anymore. And so they, you know, the main ones that really still survive in great profusion and are regularly used and worthwhile are all these around the Barbican area to the Barbican Centre and across into...
Can I play devil's advocate with this? Slightly.
Yep.
I remember visiting... I keep talking about exotic places I've visited.
Yeah.
I remember visiting Tehran a while ago. And Tehran's not unique in this respect, but Tehran is riddled. It's got a massive traffic congestion problem. It's got huge highways that lead in and out. It's a massive city. And pedestrians are pushed up into the air. So if you want to cross one of these arterial roads, you have to walk on one of these very steep bridges, pedestrian bridges that go over... because that nothing can interrupt the flow of traffic underneath. There's something of that in this concept. There's something of like pedestrians are an inconvenience to the motor traffic. Yeah. Stick them up in the air.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm getting at?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's how London, you know, after the war, you know, business was booming again, you know, after 10 years or so, and everybody had a car and everybody wanted to come into London by car. That's why this London Wall Road is built. It's not called road, but it's London Wall. It's a road. It's double lane traffic both ways. The same with Upper and Lower Thames Street. You know, they're major arteries to get through and across London, and because you didn't want to interrupt that, you had the pedway bridges over them, and although in a sense people could feel safe because I'm away from the traffic, as soon as the pedway system wasn't there everywhere, of course people had to go back down onto the pavement, and then you had that conflict, which thankfully now the City Corporation has really been innovative in the way it's had its transport strategy, it's widening pavements, it's creating cycle lanes, you know, in line with Transport for London. But they want to do more of that because of our, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people who commute in every day. All of them end up walking on the street somewhere. We need to have space for them.
Yeah.
And the pedways are fine for some walking, but we need pavements as well. And the strategy that the City Corporation is planning and consulting on at the moment is really to make sure that we make it a livable, healthy, walkable city.
Yeah. Mm. We can... Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear more about that. I think I've read just one more thing about the... about kind of how all this came about. So I understood that the traffic engineers kind of got the first dibs on the reconstruction of this area, and so they built the dual carriageways, and it was very much the idea that one, pedestrians would be safer if they were raised, but also they would be out of the way of traffic. But I think that people didn't want to go up to then go down, because although it was a lovely idea, I think the learning was that actually people do the easiest thing, which is stay on the ground level, and people would make dashes across the dual carriageway where they weren't supposed to, and apparently there were even kind of lumpy pavements to stop people from walking, and they still sort of found ways to use them. There was just this really strong desire, it's interesting, and really strong desire just to not have to climb a set of stairs. And so the businesses on the first floor on the pedways didn't really take off and then eventually faded, and I guess the Museum of London is the last one. But I think what this new section does is it's more like a linear park, more like the kind of High Line thing.
Yep.
It's got the seating, it has this wonderful curve, it's got this wood, which
it's
is
lovely.
A lovely
much
colour.
Softer, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And it's surrounded by greenery, and it's a place where you can get up away from the hustle and bustle of the street and sit and enjoy, and it is very peaceful. It's lovely.
Mm. So I feel a bit conflicted about it. I think on the one hand it's a bit of a cop out, on the other hand it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, now you've shown me that it's here, I'm going to remember it and I'm going to come here, make an active point to come here and show people it. And I do wonder whether it's got potential to be sort of rolled out way beyond the reach of just this little pocket of the City of London. Because
well,
it is it's special, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a Peckham High Line.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Anyway, yeah,
it's
on
a... Camden High Line that's
Camden
being planned
as well,
on a railway line, yep.
Yeah, so these kind of linear parks, and it does give you a different view of the city. You're slightly above it, and it's quite wonderful, actually. But
clearly being enjoyed by people as well. I mean, we've seen kids riding bikes up here. We've seen, you know, just tootling along. Yeah, it's busy, isn't it? People coming and going to and from the theatre and the Barbican. So, I mean...
feel it wobbling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
there's a little bit of flex on it. That's kind of cool. So the City of London is doing some positive stuff, walking and cycling. You've got this new strategy that you're consulting on.
Wasn't Laura, aren't I right in saying that a few months ago the city revealed that the biggest modal share is now cycling?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was 40%.
Buses, so more people on bikes than buses?
Yes. Yeah.
Good Lord. That's...
Do they count a bus as one, or do they count it as the number of people on the bus?
Good question.
This.
I think you don't know. No one knows it, Laura.
I should know this.
Either way, it's quite a startling breakthrough for bikes, isn't it?
Yeah, and a huge number of pedestrians as well. And Bank Junction was closed to through traffic a few years back, wasn't it? In fact, almost to the day, 2 weeks ago in 2018, maybe? Was it around then?
I mean, it's certainly around that time, yes. We closed it to anything other than cycles and buses between the major part of Monday to Friday. So I never remember whether it's 6.30 or 7 in the morning, seven till 7, yeah.
Yeah.
And so all the other kinds of transport, you know, cars, vans, taxis, etc., all had to take a different route.
You drew a bit of heat from the London Taxi Drivers Association, I seem to remember.
There was quite a lot of concern about it at the time, and there still is. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people feel that it needs reviewing, and the City Corporation promised and are reviewing it again to actually see how we can improve it. But there are more works happening there. So there was a first phase, and there's a second phase now, which includes actually closing two of the arms, as it's a seven road junction, so we're closing two of the arms, so there won't be so much cross traffic. But in the morning, when people spill out of Bank Station, you know, onto the streets, onto the pavements, they swarm basically. You know, there's not enough room on the pavements, so that's why we're extending the pavements so that they don't have to get pushed into the road.
Good. Yeah.
There was a stat actually about the closure being 7 till 7. Of 100 collisions between 2010 and 2014, 75% of them were between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And I think at the time the evidence was that if you allowed taxis through at that time, it would cause further injuries. And at the moment, you can get to all the points on the junction arm, you just can't drive through it. And actually, it was faster to go around it than it was to go through it, because there's six arms and each one doesn't get quite enough time. I don't know, personally, I think it would be a shame if they rolled back on any of those safety improvements. Mm.
Well, we're possibly getting a little bit off subject now. Should we walk on?
Yeah, anyway. So now there's a new plan to improve walking and cycling. And I wonder, I'm curious, because the City of London's interesting. I think 80% of your wards don't have any residents. And so business, is that right?
I don't know the specific number. I mean, my ward has got 25 residents. So, you know, you might say that's not many, but to me, they're quite important people and individuals.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are 25 wards in all. I think 80% of them not having residents is too high, but yeah, there's probably, you know, 50% that don't, perhaps. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so businesses are very important in terms of what they want is very important to the City of London. And I wonder to what extent businesses are asking for more pedestrian and cycle space for their employees.
Well, I'm the chair of an organisation that the city, or a group really, the city has set up called the Active City Network. And that's a stakeholder group with businesses coming together to talk on a regular basis with our transport team. And I chair that as, you know, an active member in this area. And I'm very keen that we do hear what they say. They've had two consultations directly, that group, on the transport strategy. And they've voiced their views. Perhaps it may not be surprising the people who are on the Active City Network group are people who are very keen to promote active travel. That's perhaps in its name. But they're a very active and informed group. They have their own, you know, cycling groups within their companies. They promote it in their businesses, and I think they're a good way that we can get to hear from people directly, because people are consulted and they often don't even turn up to consult. I'm afraid that's the trouble.
We're back in the Barbican now.
Yeah, we've gone back into the 1960s.
Well, I just wanted to say we've just crossed over what I call the drawbridge. So if you looked at it from the side, it would look like it's sloped down. And if you looked at it from the side, you think it's a drawbridge. But, of course, we can't lift it. But I suppose we could block it off, couldn't we, if we were going to be
declare independence. Passport to Pimlico.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
What do you think the Barbican can tell us about kind of making pedestrian-friendly spaces?
Well, I mean, I think the Barbican has been an extremely successful residential development. Mm. I mean, that's no two ways about it. People live here for a long time. It is a very sort of diverse residency here with, you know, old people, young people, singles, families, lots of children are brought up here. Lots of children brought up here are now coming back to live here in their own right. So it's a fantastic place that people can be, and they feel safe here. I mean, it's so low in crime. There's no crime. People wanted CCTV cameras here, and then the police said, well, actually, there's no crime, so you can't really just put CCTV cameras anywhere. You only have to prove that they're needed in order to counter crime. So, you know, that feels a very safe place to be, and that includes walking around these high walk pedways, you know, at night. not least because it's very echoey, so if anybody was following you, you'd hear them clopping behind you.
It's also quite hard to find your way around. Do you think it's hard for thieves to get in? Like, it is like a fortress.
I do sometimes think, if ever I'm sort of slightly scary, I think, well, I'll know all the ways to disappear, which they'll never, ever find. And also, as a resident, you have a key into all the blocks, so you could always use your key and get into a block and hide while anybody was there. But honestly, it never happens. You know, it's really not something that one should be worried about if you were thinking of moving here.
I mean, I have to say, it's a very peaceful scene. We've stepped a little bit away from the road now. We're more into the heart of the Barbican, and you know, it's late afternoon sun, it's a lovely, lovely warm evening, first real warm evening of the summer, and the sun's just this kind of lovely golden colour now, just illuminating the trees that separate the new block from the original Barbican. And just passing under those window boxes again just now, as we crossed over the drawbridge, I had no idea you were obliged. I think that's absolutely extraordinary. So I'm going to go and rat on all the people who aren't watering their geraniums.
So let's take a right here and then just move into the sort of garden area of the Barbican.
Lovely. One thing that occurred to me about the modern world and how this kind of intersects with the modern world is Google Maps. Mm. How does Google Maps cope with these pedways? Do they exist? Like, are they, if I put in a walking route, would it tell me to go up a, you know, that could be, that's an area of complication. I bet they haven't really.
This is why all the maps, when you come into the Barbican and you look at a map on the wall thinking, where am I going? What's very difficult to show is that there's this pedway.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I always say to anybody, look, what you need to do is to get up to the high walk. I call it the high walk because pedways aren't on any signs. I call it the high walk level because at this level, and here we are looking out over the lakes in the middle of the Barbican. This is sort of the central square, if you want to call it. And of course, you can't get across them. You have to go over the bridge, the Gilbert Bridge there. So if you aren't at that level and you're down below on lakeside level and you think, how on earth do I get to the Barbican Centre, which is across there? You need to go up across the bridge and then come down.
So just to paint a picture here, so we've got these wonderful rectangular lakes with this dark green water. There's a little fountain. They're planted out with rushes and bits of lilies a bit further out. It's absolutely idyllic looking. Almost looks like an architect's design here. The original drawings, people having a leisurely time in this lovely warm summer sun. That, in the distance, is the back of the Barbican Theatre Centre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Barbican Centre there, yeah.
And exactly. In front of us is the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. And we're still up on this kind of elevated one level up on one of these pedways, and it's honestly, if you've never been here before, you should make a point on a visit to London, coming and seeing this. This is the first time I've been to the Barbican many times, but it's never crossed my mind to actually step over here and look at it from this perspective. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, and we're looking over at the Barbican Centre and the terrace there, which is obviously where people can sit. They can bring their sandwiches to sit and read, but there's the cafe there as well, and it's a really calming place to come. I know lots of friends that come to the Barbican just to sit around and read in this sort of very quiet area, as opposed to coming actually for a performance. Of course, the performances are out of this world as well.
They are.
Wow, all of this on your doorstep. No wonder it's popular.
Yeah, where's your flat, Alison? Which one is it?
I live in one of the tower blocks.
She's pointing off to the left. Oh, you're one of the big tower blocks?
Yeah.
How many?
38th floor.
38th floor!
Wow, you must have mind-blowing views.
Yeah, it is fantastic.
I'm not jealous.
Well, what I love is you're sort of really away from everything, to be absolutely honest, up there. You don't get a lot of sound, but you get this beautiful view of the sky all the time, so you can see the weather coming in from Heathrow and going out to, I don't know, Barking and Dagenham, and similarly north and south from, you know, Alexandra Palace down past the Shard, etc. So the weather is just fantastic up there. And at the moment we do regularly have a peregrine nesting in one of the towers, and in fact during COVID, the first year of COVID, they had 5 chicks. So the whole of that first summer I was there, and the chicks and the birds, the mother and father, were flying around the towers. It was just really wonderful.
Well, I've learned an awful lot, Alison. Thank you so much. Remind our listeners again of your book that they need to buy.
Well, my book is The City of London, Who, What, Why. It's only available at the Guildhall Art Gallery shop or through me. I'm afraid I haven't syndicated it to anybody else. So Guildhall Art Gallery,
that's
worth a visit anyway.
Yeah, if this kind of thing floats you by. But just to sort of like sum up what lessons, you know, we can take, particularly with the agenda of our podcast in mind, you know, how do you rethink what's going wrong, basically? 1960s architecture gets a bad rap for good reasons a lot of the time, and you know, it's getting ripped down. It needs to be replaced with something. So does the Barbican teach us ultimately a lesson, do you think, about how to approach this with future developments that is really valuable? And do you think, you know, the attitude towards pedestrian life and the absence of cars from the Barbican is something that we've sort of like unlearned somehow, and we need to look back at this and reconnect with?
As I said, I think the Barbican is a very, very successful village and ecosystem in its own right. It was built with car parking spaces down below for people, and at one time it was difficult to get a car parking space, but now there are lots of car parking spaces to go.
Right, that's interesting.
People have given up their cars, they don't need cars anymore.
And so it's all underground, is it?
It's all underground, yeah, below levels. And so that shows that people see the connectivity of walking around the city, and you know, you almost always meet friends that you know and live with around these walkways when you're going around. And you've got obviously all the wonderful transport system that leads from it. We've now got the Elizabeth line right here at the Barbican as well, Barbican end of Farringdon. And so it's clear that if we'd made this only for accessible by cars and in that way, I just don't think it would have worked now, because the whole of the way that we work and live is so much more based on, you know, self-sufficiency, getting around, and the whole sustainability issue of not using cars, not using fossil fuels, and even electric cars, you know, are a carbon drain.
It's kind of maddening, isn't it, that this glaringly obvious bonus about the way this particular place has been designed hasn't spread throughout the country.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, clearly it's been known for a long, long time to have worked brilliantly well, and yet, you know, manifestly up and down the country we've screwed it up by building,
yeah,
you know, environments that have been reliant on and, you know, and have failed.
Yeah, we keep doing it. Yeah, it's like the lessons never get learned. You get these wonderful experiments, some of which are quite successful, and it's just like it doesn't kind of sink in. But it is a wonderful place to be, and it is so relaxing, and the sound of the water, and there's someone's got some enormous hanging plants which are just catching the light through under the balconies there, and it really is quite idyllic. It really does look like a sort of past vision of the future, and it's really quite wonderful.
Well, I'm going to get on my bike and battle the old Kent roads to go home to South
oh,
London
nice.
Now. Not that I'm criminally jealous of your walk back to your amazing accommodation, but
I thought I might leave you to try and find your way out of the Barbican
all on your own.
I'm not going to put that on the podcast. It'll be a 3-hour podcast. Alison, thank you very much. Thanks, Laura. And as ever, that was Street Head. And if you like what you hear, do rate, review, review us, and all that sort of thing. At Pod Street Head, connect with us and spread the word.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.